We've all seen the incredible horse and rider combinations as the backbone of our sport. But what about everything else that makes the equestrian world tick? From the everyday grind to the world-class professional, join the Equestrian Podcast as we talk about every equestrian discipline in a way that hasn't been done before. Now here's your host, rider, trainer, and influencer behind My Equestrian Style, Bethany Lee.
Hey friends, and welcome back to the Equestrian Podcast. I'm your host, Bethany Lee, and this is episode 403. Our guest today is an elite rider known for his exceptional skills in eventing and show jumping. He had a childhood in Queensland, Australia, where it really ignited his passion for eventing and definitely set him on a path to becoming a top-level rider. I think that his story is just so cool and unique and historic, with a dual bid for both eventing and jumping for Paris 2024. So to learn more about his story, keep listening, because this hasn't been done since Mark Todd in the 1990s. So without further ado, please welcome our guest today, Chris Burton.
Hi, Chris.
Hi, how are you?
Doing well. How are you?
Very well. Thank you.
Awesome. Thank you for taking the time. I'd love to hear, before we dive in, I'm so excited to hear about how you've been able to combine, you know, multiple disciplines at such a high level. But first, tell me, where did you kind of first get started in the horse world? What discipline was it? How did you get started in the equestrian industry?
It was my mum, really. My beautiful mother was a very good horse. She's a very good horsewoman herself. She always wanted us to ride, and my brother and I, you know, she gave us riding lessons and found us nice ponies to be on, and then I just got the bug and couldn't stop.
Love it. I know you grew up in Queensland, Australia. How do you feel like your early experiences with horses kind of shaped your passion for eventing?
Yeah, well, so growing up where I did, my brother and I would go and muster the cattle and help Dad, you know, bring in the cattle on horseback. And we also did everything, jumping and eventing. We did everything, drafting, you know, we did pony club and racing, and we did everything that you could imagine.
Nice. Yeah. What did you feel like having the experience that you did, or kind of doing lots of different types of riding? Do you feel like that kind of impacted your career and your, you know, approach to riding now?
Yeah, that's a good question. I mean, we were lucky. We had these amazing horses, my brother and I. You know, this one mare I had, she was incredible when I look back on it. We were too small to put the saddle on her. So we'd sort of climb on the fence and call her over and hop on and then go for a ride. We'd periodically fall off out just hacking. We just had fun. And then if we fell off, she was a fatty, so you'd go and get some of Dad's wheat crop or sorghum crop and try and feed her on the ground, put your leg over her ears and then slide down her neck and turn around.
No way. Oh, I love it. Yeah. That's awesome. Tell me a little bit about your first horse, Spice, and how riding him really kick-started your eventing journey.
Yeah, that was her that I was just referring to.
Oh, that was Spice. Amazing.
Yeah.
Obviously, representing Australia at some of the top world stages in your life must have been, you know, so cool. And it's obviously such a remarkable achievement. World Equestrian Games, Olympic Games. What have these experiences taught you about the sport and just yourself as a rider?
Oh, well, I mean, it's up until now, it's been my life, hasn't it? It's been my career. So that's a big question. I'm not sure quite how to answer it.
You're like, how much time do you have?
Yeah. Look, I, you know, my father didn't think that being an equestrian is a profession, didn't necessarily want me to sort of be a full-time horse rider. Perhaps that was part of my drive to succeed. Or perhaps I was just that type of character, so sort of to whatever I did, I would be sort of competitive and try hard in. But I've believed for many years now that Olympics is a great thing for people, and I think it's a great thing for the world and you know, universal sort of global coming togetherness, if you will.
Totally, yeah.
And I've been very grateful for all of the experiences I've had, and I never thought as a boy growing up on a farm in central Queensland that that I would have gotten to do some of the things I've done.
Definitely. You're known, you're very well known for your success in eventing, but you've also pursued show jumping, positioning yourself for a dual bid in this year's 2024 Paris Olympics. I know it's been quite some time before, like since another rider has done that. So obviously there's overlap between the two, but they are distinct riding disciplines. So kind of transitioning between eventing and show jumping, what do you kind of do and how do you approach the training and competing in both disciplines simultaneously?
Well, it's a yeah, it's this crazy quest, to be honest, has only started recently. However, I've found it very interesting, very fascinating. You know, I rode around a four star the other day on Shadowman and Clever Lewis, and I'm pleased to say your skill set doesn't leave you in the time, what however it's been, 3 or 4 years or maybe more. So that was pleasing. Maybe it was more. Yeah, I it's a dream of mine, of course, to go to Paris in the show jumping and the eventing, but I've got a long way to go yet, and all I can do at this stage is keep my head down and keep trying.
Yeah. What would you say, do you have a favorite part of eventing? Is it the show jumping part, which is why like it's like extra special and like extra interesting to you to do the show jumping side? Do you have a favorite?
I've always loved show jumping. When I was young, we did show jumping around the country, ag shows. I always did a little bit of show jumping in Australia as well as eventing. So I've really enjoyed, you know, my time in the show jumping sport. As for eventing, of course, everyone loves the cross country, don't they? I actually had to take a break from the sport for a while there. I was wasting too much time on politics of the sport and the future of the direction of the sport and not focusing on personal performance. And in fact, I fell out of love with the sport for a little while there, and been pleasantly surprised getting back into it, how enjoyable it is.
What was kind of the deciding factor that brought you back or made you kind of fall in love with the sport again?
Honestly, it's this horse, this Shadow Man. He's a truly amazing animal.
Yeah, tell me a little bit more about him.
So I've always loved him, you know, and it's been really nice working with Ben Hobdate, because I'm on the phone to him all the time asking him questions how to ride him. And poor Ben, I mean, no wonder he gave me a hard time handing the horse over, because it's such a lovely animal and such a pleasure to have around. And I think it's so unique. You don't see many horses in eventing that are this good in all three disciplines.
That's so
He could
cool.
actually, it is cool. Yeah, he could actually be a show jumper. I'm sure he'd be at least a very good 150 horse.
Wow, that's
Yeah.
amazing. Obviously, riding is one of the Olympic sports that requires a partner, except obviously your partner is a horse. Tell me a little bit, as you're kind of looking ahead and looking at, your plan and your strategy with two different disciplines, how does that affect your horses? Like what kind of things do you look at for your eventing horses versus your show jumping horses in your current string? We were kind of talking about Shadow Man. What is there a bit of overlap with your other horses? How do you kind of navigate what kind of traits and things that you look for when deciding where your horses kind of fall?
Yeah, so it's a mad time. I don't know how aware you are, but I go those two eventing horses halfway across Europe right now on their way to Poland. I fly there late Wednesday night, and then I go straight away, then fly to Saint-Tropez to do the jumping horses at a three-star show, Poland to attempt the four-star long, back to Fontainebleau if we get into the five-star jumping show there, where I'm sort of attempting to impress the Australian selectors with the jumping horses. So I've got a lot on my plate at the moment, and I think another show after that. Event show jumping's hard if you're not ranked in the top few hundred in the world. It's difficult to get into these five stars. But we've got, speaking of partnerships, we've got two very nice Grand Prix horses, my mare in particular, who actually was hard to get to know, you know, in the short space of time that I've had her. And she's feeling more and more like my horse. And this year she feels like we really know each other a lot better. And she was a bit of a tricky mare. and I'm having a lot of fun on her at the moment. Shadow Man, anyone could write him. Ben's done such a lovely job, and he's such a lovely animal. You just got to point him between the flags, really.
Yeah. Oh,
And
so cool.
interestingly, further to that question, been very generously given the ride back on Clever Lewis. Thank you to our amazing owner, Dr. Jeffrey Guy here at Cheddington, and Janelle, my good friend Janelle Price, who's a good event rider for those of you that know her. They've kindly said, look, you're going to need another one. Why don't you take Clever Lewis out? So that was fascinating to just get back on him and go straight to a four-star. And even though we'd had time apart, when you know each other, it all just came straight back to us. It was amazing.
Yeah, that's so special. What would you say is your take on your mental game and preparation? What role does that play in your overall performance, especially during these high pressure competitions?
Yeah, I don't know. I don't obviously during my time in high performance, and Australia has had a very well-run high performance program over the years. We've had access to sports psychs and things, but I try not to get too bogged down in that. And I would say that, you know, a lot of people can get lost in that kind of thing. Although it's prudent to be aware of your, you know, mental state and where you're going with it. I will say that I do find that I compete well, and when I look back at the years when I've had a lot of success, we've just been keeping me busy, you know. And I suspect that this trip, although it's quite stressful and a lot coming up, I suspect that I do swim well when thrown in the deep end.
Yeah, that's cool. I think that there tends to be, I feel like a special sector of equestrians that, you know, really they honestly like need the pressure, and like it really helps them. And so I feel like riders that can really take that extra, not like nerves, but just like the pressure of wanting to do well and being able to channel that into executing. I think that that's key, and that's a really special ability to be able to do that.
Yeah, and I'm sure that happens with a lot of top athletes in any
Sure.
sport. You know, probably happens in a lot of industries and business as well. So I teach a little bit, and I find myself sort of answering questions like that. Now, how do you control your nerves? And I think not a question that I can answer. What you have to learn is that it's okay to be nervous. That's what keeps you alive up there on the horse.
Right.
What you're talking about is confidence, and you know, a lot of good riders, it comes to them because they're so experienced. They've had so many hours in the saddle. They've had so many, and that I find myself saying when I teach. So it's pretty simple formula, guys. You know, you want to be a good jumps rider, go and jump as many fences as Mark Todd has, and if you come back to me and say you're not a good jumps rider, then well, then something's gone wrong.
Yeah, simple as that. In your speaking of, in your opinion, what would you say sets apart top level eventers and show jumpers from the rest of the competition? Would you say that, you know, confidence is what, you know, plays a huge role in that?
I don't know. I think, like so many sports these days, you know, there's so many good athletes striving for perfection. And then these ones that just get set apart. I don't think anyone can explain it. I don't think maybe they themselves can't even explain it. You know, I'm in total admiration of our friends and neighbors that are based here, Tim and Janelle Price. I'm always asking them about things. You know, I think Tim is an extraordinary sports person in his own right. And he's got this lovely sort of layback nature towards things, and when you look a little closer, you realize he does work very hard for it. And I think that's tough for him, that people assume it comes so easily to him just because he's so nice about it all. Yeah, but quite putting your finger on it, I don't know. I mean, for many years in my career, I was always very envious of Mickey Young. He had this wonderful network and team around him, finding the right horses, preparing the horses, getting everything ready just right. And then combined with this insane amount of skill and talent, made him, you know, for a good decade or so there, just unbeatable, you know. And we were always sort of trying to look over the fence, seeing how Mickey's doing it, because he was so amazing and so unique.
Yeah, absolutely.
I have to tell you about this newer supplement that is seemingly sweeping the world for equine and also for dog health, but it is the supplement called Be Complete from the Banana Feeds Company. One of the, I think the coolest thing to this is that it is literally made of one ingredient, and that is green bananas. It most specifically promotes gut health. That is the biggest part, but it also has so many antioxidant benefits. It improves temperament, it improves coat health and shine, and it promotes overall health, and it really does improve performance, because when a horse feels healthy, especially in its gut, it's going to perform at its highest potential. So for more information, you can see a whole list of benefits of Be Complete on their website, which is
be-complete.com. Again, that is be-complete.com. All right, let's get back to the episode.
Reflecting on your career so far, what are some of, you know, maybe the proudest moments or achievements that when you look back really stick out to you?
Yeah, I had quite a few ones that really stick in my mind, you know, that I'm very proud of. But it's odd how we get addicted to the buzz, and we just want to go and do it again. And I think that's back here. We'll certainly be going back to ARC, and I second year I attempted ARC, and I happened to win it on this quirky little New Zealand horse that I found, who was insanely talented and performed for whatever reason very well on that day.
Yeah.
And we won, and then we went back the following year with a good old campaigner, and she also performed out of her shoes and we won that one. So it was always a fun place for me, ARC.
I'm sure that's one of your favorite places. You're like, yeah, obviously we have to keep that in the one in the schedule.
Well, anyone that's been there will agree, you know, it's an amazing show.
And, yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, to see high level equestrian.
Yeah. What does it mean to you personally to have the opportunity to, you know, represent Australia in potentially both disciplines? And how do you maybe kind of channel that ambition and excitement into your training and preparation right now?
I think that's exactly it. I'm just sort of putting it to the back of my mind. Mm-hmm. Although I have sort of told you that it is a dream of mine, it's a huge mountain to climb and a long way to go. To be honest, I'm really enjoying eventing. I'm loving the show jumping. So that's just part of the journey. You know, we just have to keep our eye on the target and continue to ride well and strive for greatness, and we'll take what comes.
Mm-hmm. For your show jumping days in eventing, and when you're doing the show jumping separately, do you have a different mindset? Obviously, horse to horse, it's, you know, that will change anyway. But within the disciplines, do you approach your show jumping differently?
Well, I guess famously, some eventers, I guess I had a lot of fences down in 3-day events on tired horses. And, and you know, we sort of say we lost some events when we had fences down in the show jumping, but of course we didn't lose it, did we? It was just that we were in the lead. It was never ours.
Right.
And those sort of things are sort of etched in your mind. But I think going back to one of your questions earlier, you know, when I watch these top show jumping riders that I know and that we know of around the world, there are so many of them. I mean, there would be 50 top riders in the world that you'd have a hard time picking their skill set apart. They're all equally talented, equally amazing and astonishing. And then actually the horse sets you apart, you know.
Mm-hmm. Definitely.
If you're lucky enough to find yourself on a careful horse on the last day of a 3-day event, then go and have a great time.
Yeah.
You know, if sound and healthy, and then go and have a great time. If you've sort of bashed your way around and scrubbed your way around on a normal jumper and you're at a 3-day event, it's likely you're going to have a bad time in the mm-hmm. show jumping. But that's mm-hmm. the sport, isn't it? We're all looking for that amazing horse, aren't we?
Yeah, yeah. Yes, I bet that's definitely makes you think differently about the show jumping and eventing, because you are dealing with the potential, I mean, for sure the fatigue of it being at the end and having, you know, them having worked so hard the past couple of the days prior, whereas maybe with the show jumping individually, you can kind of have a little bit more strategy to have them kind of peak on that day. And so, yeah, I think, yeah, that's interesting to think about.
Yeah.
Tell me a little bit, maybe about a time during your Olympic preparation, where you faced a setback or a challenge and how you had to kind of work through it and overcome it, and maybe something you learned from that experience to kind of further your program.
Yeah, I think no matter what it looks like from the outside, any top rider, top athlete has had ups and downs. It's just part of the course, you know,
Absolutely.
and to say it doesn't happen, you know, is not true. Some riders appear to have had a easy run to the top, and then staying at the top might be a different thing. So there's many ways to skin a cat. There's many ways to get there. It's no secret. I had a terrible time around Tokyo Olympics. You know, that the year before I had, I think, five of the best qualified horses for Team Australia on, you know, inside a score of 20, five of them all inside scores of 26 or something, or 25. And then, you know, a couple of them got old. We had a few injuries occur, and then I took my mare out when she wasn't healthy enough with a back leg problem. And then they didn't take me on another horse that I was riding, Glover Lewis. And that was a really tough thing for me not to go to Tokyo when the years before, you know, it just seemed like a dead certain that I was going. So that was a tough time in my life, and took a bit of getting through. And I'm still a bit bitter about the whole thing, if
Yeah.
I'm really honest.
I bet it does give you like even more drive and determination towards these future Olympic games, though.
Yeah, well, there you go. I think that's it, isn't it? You know, you sort of run away from it, or you learn from it, don't you?
Yep.
And bit of a cliche, but I'm only thinking of that saying. But if it doesn't kill you, it does make you stronger.
It's true. What advice would you give to aspiring riders who dream of competing in the Olympic Games someday, or you know, reaching the top levels of the sport? But just based on your own journey and experiences, what advice would you give?
I would say, obviously a projection of my own, but I would say try to enjoy it at the same time. It's a pretty cool thing if you can ride a horse for a living. It's a very cool thing if you can ride a horse for a living to an Olympic Games, and it's a hell of a journey and a wonderful thing to be a part of.
Definitely. Yeah, I think so often you kind of you get a taste of success and you get kind of you can it's easy to get caught up in that or maybe give yourself an unrealistic standard and you know kind of like you said earlier there it's inevitable that there will be ups and downs and you're not winning every class and you're not, you know, it's just not the reality of the format of our sport. And so I think being able to really roll with it and learn and really see those maybe experiences that weren't exactly how you were hoping they would turn out, that they're just learning opportunities to maybe try it again, you know, for next time. But yeah, I think that that's really great advice, to be able to kind of step back and remember why we got in the sport in the first place and just enjoying the horses and all that they do for us.
Yeah, that's right. I suppose there's a young rider in Australia that I'm quite fond of. He's a very talented young boy, and I found myself talking to his mother the other day, and I said, "You tell him to just focus on his job and let his riding do the talking. Don't get bogged down in the." And then I finished it by sending another message saying, "If he learns how to do that, can you tell me how?"
Oh gosh, exactly. What would you say is something that you're passionate about in the industry that you feel people either don't talk a lot about or don't know enough about?
Oh, look, I think anyone that's, you know, known me, been to a dinner party where I've probably had one too many beers, certainly not the industry of equestrian, but the industry of eventing. I've believed for many years now that the sport needs to go short format, and I don't care anymore if I get a rap over the knuckles, or if I get sort of poo-pooed from the die-hard, avid long format eventers. I simply think you can make it more commercial. you make it more sustainable, you can, you know, be a lot nicer to these poor animals that get run into the ground trying to be a long format horse.
Right.
This is, I've believed this for a long time now.
What do you think would be, what's the pushback from going in that direction?
I don't know. I think, you know, this was some of the politics that I got caught up in. I think you and I already touched on it. But I like anything, change is hard for people to accept. People don't like change. That's probably good for us as humans, as, and there's evolution, and perhaps for equestrian, that's not a bad thing either. I just found it frustrating because I thought the answer's right there. You know, all the malarkey and the trouble they went to with trying to find the Olympic format for eventing honestly made me laugh. I thought the answer is so obvious. You do short format, you know, you run the Arkin format, it works so incredibly well. There's very little happens to the horses because they're not fatigued, they're not as tired, they're not injuring themselves, they're not hurting themselves and having ugly pitches. And you show jump the day before, and then we can start putting the show jumps up and showing, look, these riders are good riders and horses are good jumpers. You know, if you didn't know enough about the sport, or I've had it, in fact, I've had this question from show jumpers. They stick their head in on the last day and they think, why are they jumping these skinny horses so badly over 1.20 meters? But it's embarrassing to us. The traditionalists will say, well, that's the sport. We need the endurance element. We need this and that. And this is that. They might be right. I don't know the answer. This is just my opinion on it. But I personally don't see why we need endurance in the sport. I think of all the skill sets for an eventing rider, endurance is the smallest amount of that. You know, you need to be a very good rider these days. You need to be a phenomenal jumping rider these days, and so on and so forth. So I personally think short format is a wonderful way for the sport to progress and go forward.
I think that's so interesting. And I'm not very well versed in the eventing world. I'm a hunter jumper trainer, but just seeing and experiencing what I have in the eventing world, it's like already such a huge feat to find a horse that can perform at such a high level in cross country, dressage, and show jumping. And I'm like, shouldn't that, can't that be the challenge in and of itself? Do you have to throw the endurance part in as well? And I just, yeah, it seems like there's already so much going on in that discipline that it could be really beneficial to the health and the longevity of the animals to maybe
Well,
start talking about that.
I see it. I don't know. You know, people will have strong arguments on the other hand, you know, and I welcome them to sort of get in touch and let's hear them. But this is just my personal view.
Well, thank you for saying that and shedding some light on it. But Chris, thank you so much for taking the time and coming on. I think it's, such an exciting time of year and season with Olympics approaching around, kind of soon. And so I'll be excited to continue to watch your journey and I wish you all the best.
It's a pleasure to talk to you. Thank you very much for having me on.
All right, that is all I have for you today. Thank you so much for tuning in. If you liked what you heard, please take a minute and write a review on iTunes. I would so appreciate it. It helps people like you find the podcast, and it helps me get some killer guests. Thank you so much, and I will talk to you next week.